Marshal. You want to come in the drive?
I can't stop, Sam. I've got a private meeting with my land steward. See you.
We present The Beekeeper's Apprentice by Laurie King. Adapted into 4 episodes by Sean Prendergast. With Monica Dolan as Mary Russell, Sean Thomas as Dunleavy, and James Fox as Sherlock Holmes. Episode 1, The Beekeeper's Apprentice.
Come. Oh. You are punctual, Miss Russell, but I see the Oxford skies have been unkind to you. Hang up your coat to dry while I set out the board and pieces.
I'm delighted to be invited, Miss Dunleavy. Thank you. Chess is an infinitely fascinating game. A combination of old-fashioned tactics and what is nowadays referred to as psychological warfare.
And it is most stimulating when one meets a mind of similar metal.
I'm flattered.
Don't be. Sit. Tea? Or sherry or a brandy to warm you through?
Just tea, thank you.
As you wish. I suppose you're too alert a student to think chess the only reason for our meeting. This is a delicate matter, but the welfare of my students must be my paramount concern. I believe, Mary, that you are very close to someone whose intellectual gifts have passed almost into... Well, let us not be fanciful. Suffice to say that news of your extraordinary friendship has preceded you.
I was afraid it might.
Oh. I hope there is nothing to be afraid of. Nevertheless, as your tutor, I confess to certain misgivings about a female student and a... Do you understand?
Of course. And if it will put your mind at rest, I will happily answer any relevant questions.
Choose a hand.
Left.
Black. I play first. Well then, let us begin.
As I sat there in the book-lined rooms of my tutor in Oxford in 1917, it seemed a lifetime away from my meeting with the man she described. I was 15 years old, with my nose in a book, as I walked the Sussex Downs and nearly stepped on him. In my defence, I must say that it was a cool, sunny day in early April. The book was by Virgil, and I had hardly ever stepped on anyone before.
Oh. What on earth are you doing, lying in wait for someone?
I can hardly be accused of lying anywhere, as I am seated on an uncluttered hillside minding my own business.
You have not answered my question, sir.
I am watching bees. Observe.
Fascinating. Hate. Fascinating.
Did you speak?
Not to you. Though if I were to speak to you, I should say the bees with the blue spots are a better bet if you're trying for a hive. The ones you've only marked with red are probably from Mr. Warner's orchard. The blue spots are almost sure to be wild ones.
What did you say?
I beg your pardon. Are you hard of hearing?
How did you come to know of my interests?
I should have thought it obvious. I see paint on your pocket handkerchief and traces on your fingers where you wiped it away. The only reason to mark bees that I can think of is to enable one to follow them to their hive. 3 months ago, we had an unusual cold spell that killed many hives. Therefore, I assume you are tracking bees in order to replenish your own stock.
My God, it can think.
My God, it can recognize another human being when it is hit over the head with one. And to think that I was raised to believe that old people had decent manners.
I stood back to watch my blows strike home, and as I faced him squarely, my mind's eye finally linked him up with rumours I'd heard. And I knew who he was. And I was appalled. Before me towered a figure of pure genius, one of the great minds of his generation. A legend. Sherlock Holmes.
Young man, I...
Young man!
That did it. Rage swept into my veins, filling me with power. I reached for the brim of my oversized cap, and my long blonde plaits slithered down over my shoulders.
It's a damn good thing you did retire, if that's all that's left of the great detective's mind.
So, young lady, you have the advantage of me.
My name is Mary Russell.
Mary.
I believe I was named after the Magdalene, rather than the Virgin.
Ah, that explains it.
Oh, I do like to see my cooking appreciated. When you've finished, Will wants a word with you about the far hedge.
I care not a jot for the far hedge. Oh, blast. Why did I ever leave London? Now, come here, Miss Russell. I have something to show you. My observation hive.
Bees? Inside the house?
Do you see the Queen?
Let me see if I can find her. Have you ever seen a queen bee, Miss Dunleavy? Twice the size of the others, and imbued with a dumb, bristling purpose, she seemed a creature of another race from her hive mates. Cold? Just a sudden chill. I'm fine.
Your move. Holmes wrote a book on beekeeping, as I recall, with such a provocative subtitle, with some observations upon the segregation of the queen. I believe for a technical work it was well received.
A fact in which he took pride.
And this from a man who famously declined a knighthood. Well, this is most interesting. And what did you discuss once you had exhausted the apiary?
I asked Holmes if he would give his opinion of me. And he agreed.
On one condition. First, you must forgive my old and much abused brain if it is slow and creaking. For such thought patterns as I once lived by are a habit and become rusty without continual use. Daily life here with Mrs. Hudson and Will is a poor whetting stone for sharp wit.
Agreed.
Good. I see before me one Mary Russell, named after her paternal grandmother. She is, let us see, 15, I think. Yes, 15 years of age. And despite her youth and the fact that she is not at school, she intends to pass the university entrance examinations. She is obviously left-handed. One of her parents was Jewish, her mother, I think. Yes, definitely the mother. And she reads and writes Hebrew. All right so far?
The Hebrew?
The ink marks on your fingers could only come from writing right to left.
Of course. That is very impressive.
Parlour games. But the accents are not without interest. Say the word martyr for me.
Martyr.
Miss Russell herself grew up in the southwestern edges of London, which has recently come from her father's home in the western United States, most likely Northern California, and within the last 2 years. Sometime between then and December, both her parents died, very possibly in the same accident in which Miss Russell was involved last September or October. An accident which has left scar tissue on her throat, scalp, and right hand, and a slight stiffness in the right knee. After her recovery, she was sent back home to a tight-fisted and unsympathetic relative, who feeds her rather less than she needs. This last conjecture serves to explain why she appears at a stranger's table, to consume rather more than she might if ruled strictly by her obvious good manners. Oh, dear. I have been warned about this tendency of mine. I do apologize for any distress I have caused you.
200 years ago, you would have been burnt.
I cannot say I've ever fancied myself in the role of witch cackling over my pot.
Actually, the Book of Leviticus calls not for burning, but for the stoning of a man or woman who speaks with the spirits, Yob, a necromancer or a medium, or who is a Yidini, from the verb to know, a person who achieves knowledge and power other than through the grace of the Lord God of Israel, a sorcerer. Go on.
This young lady's parents were relatively well-to-do, and their daughter inherited, which combined with her daunting intelligence makes it impossible for this penurious relative to bring her to heel. Miss Russell, forgive my intrusion, but I tend towards rather a dim view of human nature. If I may inquire as to your will?
In the event of my death, my aunt would get only an adequate yearly amount. Hardly more than she gets now.
I see. Excellent. Come, have another glass of my honey wine. I will show you my garden, and you can tell Sherlock Holmes about himself.
Well, Miss Russell, it is your move. But mind you, I want to hear from you, not what you have picked up from my over-enthusiastic friend Watts.
The illustrations are certainly deceptive. They make you look considerably older.
I am now 54. Shall we stroll through the orchard? Conan Doyle and his accomplices at the Strand thought to make me more dignified by exaggerating my age. Youth does not inspire confidence in life or in stories.
I will keep that in mind. To begin, you come from a moderately wealthy background, though your relationship with your parents was not an entirely happy one. To this day, you try to come to grips with that part of your past. That is why you keep that much-handled formal photograph of your family that I saw on the shelf in your study slightly obscured by books, rather than openly mounting it on the wall and forgetting them.
Very good indeed. Turn right ahead.
Without being too prying, I should say that it contributed to your early decision to distance yourself from women. Someone such as yourself would find it difficult to have an other-than-all-inclusive relationship with a woman, unlike the unequal and somewhat whimsical relationship you had with Dr. Watson.
I deduce, Miss Russell, Watson transforms. Ah, the bench. Join me.
You took a remarkably early retirement 12 years ago to study the perfection and unity of bees and to work on your magnum opus on detection. You continue your chemical experiments. Your cuffs bear acid burns too fresh to have frayed in the wash. You no longer smoke cigarettes. Your pipe is used often. The calluses on your fingertips indicate that you have kept up with the violin. Your skin shows the mark of stings both old and new, and your suppleness indicates that the theories about bee stings as therapy for rheumatism have some basis. Or is it arthritis?
Rheumatism, in my case.
Also, I think that it is possible that you have not entirely given up your former life. Even in this light, I see a vague area of pale skin on your chin. Sometime last summer you had a goatee, since shaven off. Spying against the Kaiser, I should venture to say.
Are you familiar with the works of Dr. Sigmund Freud?
I find the works of the next generation more helpful. Freud is overly obsessed with exceptional behaviour. An aid to your line of work, perhaps, but not as useful for a generalist.
20 years ago, even 10. But here, now?
Did he mean by that? At the time, I had no idea. Your move.
I know.
Oh. Congratulations, an excellent ambush. Perhaps I am too absorbed in my recollection to truly appreciate danger.
It is a very dangerous business getting lost in the past. But now you understand the remark.
Oh, I understood it as soon as I actually met Dr. John Watson.
The faithful amanuensis.
Well, I was quite prepared to detest him.
Miss Russell, I am so very happy to meet you at last. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. He has put on half a stone. His heart beats strong. Mrs. Hudson says he sleeps. He has even given up the cocaine. And I thank you with all my soul, for you have done what my skills could not, and brought back my truest friend from the grave.
Oh, come now, Watson. From the grave, indeed? I'll not have you worrying the child that she's in any way responsible for me.
I only wish to thank her.
Very well, you have thanked her. Death and resurrection, ridiculous.
But it was not ridiculous.
No. The beekeeper needed an apprentice, and nothing more. Mrs. Hudson's presence in the cottage made my hours with Holmes possible. Rural society recognizes a true gentleman when it sees one.
There must have been gossip.
I never heard it.
And what form did this apprenticeship take?
Holmes began to devise puzzles for me. Chess was one of them, but there were many others. It took me 2 years, but I can follow a footprint 10 miles across country, tell a London accountant from a Bath schoolmaster by their clothing, and recognise the ashes from the 112 most common brands of cigarettes and cigars.
It must have been a fascinating experience. Your move.
I know. There. It was. An amazing time. But while I grew and flexed the muscles of my mind, the bodies of strong young men were being poured ruthlessly into the 500-mile gutter that was the Western Front. I was desperate to do something to help. And through Holmes, I gained my first opportunity.
Russell,
Pour yourself a cup of tea and sit down.
Thank you.
Now that she is here, Mrs. Barker, would you please review the problem for us?
You may know that my husband Richard and I had been living in America before the war, but Richard was very fortunate with several of his investments, and we came to England in 1913. We fell in love with the manor house here and bought it just before the war started. At any rate, about a year ago, my husband became quite ill for a few days. At first it seemed nothing serious, merely an upset stomach. But it progressed until he was curled up in his bed, bathed in sweat and groaning horribly.
What did his doctors say?
They were beginning to despair when the fever broke. In a week he had fully recovered, or so we thought. Since then, he has had 10 episodes similar to the first, though none as bad.
Describe them.
Each begins with a chill sweat and proceeds through cramps and delirium, and finally a pitch of fever and a deep sleep. On the first night, he cannot bear to have me with him. The doctors suggested poison, but we always eat the same foods. I watch it being cooked. It is not poison. I have come to believe it is not a medical problem.
Why?
We have consulted every doctor on the continent. Mr. Holmes, Miss Russell, I will not insult you by making you swear that what I next say goes no further than this room. My husband is an advisor to the Government of England, Mr. Holmes. Your own telephone is available because the Prime Minister needs to be able to reach my husband at any time.
Mrs. Barker, the fact that your husband is a government advisor and the fact that he periodically becomes ill are not necessarily related.
My husband's illnesses always correspond with a period of considerable clarity, never during fog or rain. He became ill again 2 weeks ago. The night his illness began, he asked me to leave him alone as usual. I walked around the garden for a time, until it was quite late. And when I turned back, I saw a light winking on and off from the roof over his room.
And you think it might be your husband passing on government secrets to the Kaiser?
Mr. Holmes, how could you have known that?
My good lady, you told me yourself. Your emotions made it obvious. If you suspected someone else, you would not be so upset. Now, tell us about your household.
We have 5 full-time servants who live in the house. There is Terence Howell, my husband's man, and Sylvia Jacobs, my maid, Sally and Ronald Woods, the cook and the chief gardener, and lastly, Ronald Athens, who keeps the stable and the 2 cars.
Madam, if you would be so good as to go home now, I think it very likely that a couple of your neighbours will be around to your door later this afternoon. An unexpected visit, you understand?
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. If my fears are correct, I have married a traitor. If I am wrong, I am myself guilty of traitorous thoughts against my husband. There is no win here, only duty.
Madam, to face honestly all possible conclusions formed by a set of facts is the noblest route possible for a human being.
Now, Russell, this is the house. Ahead.
A commanding position.
Yes, the builder may have had some desire to view the sea. I believe that a close examination of the map would show a correlation between the tower and a gap in the hills over there.
It does.
Ah, so that is where you were while I was lacing on my boots.
Looking at your maps, yes.
I think we may assume that the upper rooms in the tower are those of Richard Barker. Put on a casual happen to be in the neighbourhood face now, Russell. Here's the gentleman himself. Hello, the house!
They're going to attack, Holmes.
Stand by, Russell.
I wasn't going anywhere.
I guess something really must be done about these
dogs. Oh. 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 I'm afraid they became overly excited.
Let dogs delight to bark and bite, for God hath made them so. Oh. My name is Holmes, this is Mary Russell. We were out for a walk and wished for a closer view of your handsome home. We'll not bother you further.
Oh, no, no, you must come in for refreshment.
We'll be down in the conservatory for tea when I've shown Mr. Holmes my view, Howell.
Very good, sir.
Most impressive, eh, Russell?
Indeed.
I've always wanted an ivory tower. The lift was an extravagance, but I have problems with climbing the stairs. So, what a coastline.
I hope you don't mind, Mr. Barker, but I must see the very top. I'll just be an instant.
Russell, what is this clever trap door up here?
It's not safe up there, Mr. Holmes. I can't think why that door is unlocked. I told Howell to fix a padlock to it. I was up there 3 years ago, and I didn't like the look of it at all.
You'll be quite careful, Mr. Barker. And I'm sure he'll be just a moment. Ah, see, here he comes now.
Thank you, Mr. Barker. You have a most interesting tower. Now, tell me about the primitive art in your hall downstairs. New Guinean, isn't it? Pacific River, I believe.
Is it not nice of the government to arrange this telephone line for the use of the Barkers and myself?
I'm sorry, Holmes, but what are we looking for?
Oh, Russell, it is I who should apologize. Of course you did not see the roof. Had you, you would have found this wood chip and half a dozen cigarette ends. Mrs. Barker told me her husband does not smoke. It is really quite simple.
Elementary, in fact?
Precisely. Consider then the following. A chip of treated wood atop an unused tower. Sepik River art and an absence of poison. And the woods that the road cuts through up ahead.
Are you telling me the butler did it?
I'm afraid it does happen. Shall we search the woods for the debris?
Holmes, look. At the base of that telegraph pole in the long grass. Bones.
Do you feel like a spot of climbing, Russell, or shall I?
If I may borrow your belt for leverage, I should be happy to. I saw no sign of spikes or climbing on the butler's shoes, did you?
No, but I'm certain that a search through his room would give us a pair with suggestive scuffs and scratches.
Right, I'm ready. Catch me if I fall.
There are signs of a line being tapped in here. Shall we come back with a fingerprint kit?
I think if the weather holds, we will be able to catch the fingers themselves in action tonight. I suspect Mr. Barker will fall ill again.
Russell, do your eyes pick up anything from that tower? Here we sit, blind as moles, while he's so far back from the edge we can't see him.
It's there. He's out there with a light.
Come on.
Miss Russell, do you mean to say Sherlock Holmes led you, a young girl, into unknown danger?
We were not alone. As we approached the house, we were joined by a team of men summoned by Holmes from the proper authorities.
And they apprehended the felon.
Yes.
This is not a game, young lady. I demand the truth.
They did. But in the ensuing struggle, he got away.
I was on the open stairway of the house. Suddenly, a noise came from above. I saw feet coming down the stairs. And praying it was not Holmes, I reached out and grabbed. I scrambled up and looked down at the crumpled figure of the butler. Thomas Howell.
Oh, God, Holmes, I killed him! I didn't think he'd fall that hard. Oh, God, how could I have done it?
Ring for a doctor, would you please, Mrs. Barker? He's got a bad bang on the head and a few broken bones, but he's alive.
I need to sit down for a moment, Holmes.
Are you all right, Russell? Here.
Yes. No thanks to your swelling sores, Holmes. Oh, Mr. Holmes, my husband is much worse.
Yes, there's not a moment to lose. Come, Russell. We must search Howell for him.
What are we looking for?
A packet of powder or a bottle of liquid. One or the other. I'll start with the wardrobe. You look in the cabinet.
Have you found anything, Holmes?
Cigarettes from Fraser's of Portsmouth. Boots with scratches over the arches. What have you there?
I don't know. I can't smell a thing anymore. Does it smell like eau d'orabe to you?
You found it, Russell. Come along to Mr. Barker's room.
Help him, Mr. Holmes.
Mrs. Barker, have you a small spoon?
What is that?
The antidote to the poison.
Help me!
He's not being poisoned. I can
over you too if he were.
Oh, no, he's not received any poison for over a year. He receives the antidote regularly, as you do, without harm. We shall feed him a dilute solution, gradually.
Here's water, Holmes.
Good boy, your hands are steady. You told me that his manservant had been with him for many years, including his time in New Guinea. Here, help me force the antidote between his teeth. There is a small number of very rare poisons that, once administered, are never got rid of, but can be effectively blocked by regular ingestion of the antidote. One of these poisons is popular with a tribe of the Sepik River area of New Guinea. Obviously, while your husband was there, his servant conducted his own research on the side. Howell would take his dogs for a walk, would he not? They would go down to the woods. He would climb up the telephone line and listen in on your husband's conversation while the dogs gnawed the bones. On the next clear night, he would fail to administer the antidote, cloister himself up with his master, and slip up to the roof to signal the results of his spying to a confederate on the coast. I think it is beginning to work already.
My dear, what are these people doing here?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Holmes. Thank you.
Well, Miss Russell, what can I say? Such patriotic activity is to be applauded. But I still have grave doubts as to the suitability of your relationship. The merest hint of scandal could not be tolerated. However, it is late, and we have neglected our own game. You will notice that it is your move.
Oh, yes.
And I respond? By putting you in check, I'm afraid.
Not now. Oh. I see now that I've fallen into your trap.
You have indeed. Checkmate. Thank you, Miss Russell. That was an absorbing challenge. May I presume upon your company next week?
Oh, you can be certain of it, Miss Dunleavy. The game may be lost, but the battle has just begun.
In The Beekeeper's Apprentice, Mary Russell was played by Monica Dolan, Sherlock Holmes by James Fox, and Dunleavy by Sean Thomas. Mrs. Barker was played by Elaine Claxton, Mr. Barker by Gavin Muir, and Watson by Sean Prendergast. All other parts were played by members of the cast. The Beekeeper's Apprentice was written by Laurie King, dramatized by Sean Prendergast, and directed by Melanie Harris.